That's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you into an hour of horror. In just a little while, it's Suspense from 1954, but right now, The Haunting Hour. This was broadcast on August 18th, 1945, released by NBC Syndication. It's the story, The People in the House.
The stillness of this moment. For this is a time of mystery, a time when imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is The Haunting Hour. People in the House. All houses have their secrets, and the house on East 67th Street in New York was no exception. Its rooms had seen the births and deaths of seven generations of Thatchers. And now they look down with despair upon the three people living within its walls. Evans Thatcher III, his son, Kendall, Kendall's lovely wife, Margaret. For evil and hatred stalked the rooms and took you by the throat when you entered the house. It was polite and hidden, but sinister. And present so strongly that you felt you could reach out and touch it.
Margaret, come in, my dear. I've been waiting for you.
Oh, I didn't know you were home.
Aren't you forgetting something, my dear?
I didn't know you were home, Father.
That's much better, Margaret. I only ask that you behave as any daughter should to a father-in-law.
Where's Kendall, Father?
My dear, Kendall is only my son, but he's your husband. I'm surprised you should ask me his whereabouts. Most wives of my acquaintance are...
All right, Kendall isn't home. Let's stop acting.
My dear child, I've never acted with you. It is you who pretends to like me. I take little pains to conceal my dislike of you.
I hate you. I hate you more than I believed I could ever hate another human being. And if it weren't for Kendall...
Why don't you divorce Kendall, my dear? I'd gladly pay for it. Kendall isn't the proper husband for you. You should have married a strong young detective. There was a suitable match for you. By the way, what was his name?
Walters. Larry Walters.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the name perfectly. Father. And I didn't marry him because I was in love with Kendall.
Oh, come now, my dear. We both know the truth. You could hardly marry a representative of law and order if you told him the truth about yourself. But after tonight, why, I imagine that difficulty should be solved.
Oh, you're completely vile. There's one thing you've never understood. A mind like yours can't understand it. I love Kendall more than I hate you. And I'm not going to leave him alone with you so that you can ruin him completely.
Too bad that you can't afford to move out of my house into an apartment of your own, isn't it? I'm sure that if Kendall could get a job and support you, you'd be deliriously happy.
Yes, I would. But you've taken good care to see that Kendall is too weak to go out in the world, haven't you?
Now, my dear Margaret...
Don't think I don't know what you're doing. You've hated Kendall since the day he was born and deliberately set out to ruin him by giving him everything he wanted. You've made Kendall so completely dependent upon you that he's afraid to leave. You've pampered him so that he's fit for nothing.
You're insane.
No, I'm not. I'm perfectly sane. I'm willing to stay here and fight you till I've made a man out of Kendall. And we both walk out of this house together with our heads up.
And I'll see you both dead and rotting first. Oh, good evening, Kendall. Did you take my message to the club?
Yes, Father. Mr. Ainslie said there was no reply.
Oh?
Hello, Margaret.
Hello, darling. Well, aren't you even going to kiss me? I haven't seen you since this morning.
You bet I am.
Nonsense, Kendall. Stop acting as if you were a newlywed instead of behaving like a man who's been married a whole year.
Well, my mother and father were married 22 years, and he kissed her every night when he came home.
There. You see, Father, kissing your wife.
Kendall, come along upstairs. I want to talk to you. My dear Margaret, you'd better change. We're dining with some friends of mine.
But Kendall and I had planned to eat home tonight, Father.
Did you? I didn't. I don't very well see how you can. I left instructions that there was to be no marketing today and gave the servants the night off. Are you coming, Kendall?
Yes, Father. I'll see you later, Margaret.
I hate you, Evans Thatcher. I hate you. I wish you were dead.
Hello?
Larry, is that you?
Margaret, what is it? What's the matter?
Larry, I've got to see you.
Foolish child.
I must have a wrong number.
No, you haven't, Margaret. You're in trouble. I'll be right over.
No, you mustn't. You mustn't. Goodbye.
Well, are we all ready? Margaret, you look beautiful in that dress.
I'm afraid that the dress will have to go back, Kendall.
But, Father, why? You said yourself...
I changed my mind. I will not pay for it.
I don't want you to pay for it. I didn't ask you to buy it. Oh, Kendall. Kendall, can't you see what he's doing to us? I don't want him to pay for anything of mine ever. Kendall, please. Please, let's get out of this house now.
Margaret is hysterical, Kendall. She doesn't know what she's saying. She's just done something very stupid and childish, for which I'm afraid I must punish you, Kendall.
No. No, I'm not going to stand by and see this again. You're not
going
to...
Come here, Kendall.
I'm sorry, Father, really. I'm sorry. I mean it. I'll never do
it
again.
It's a little late for that, my dear. Come here, Kendall.
You can have the telephone taken out, I promise. Please don't hit Kendall.
Mr. Thatcher?
Oh, come in, Mr. Walters. It was thoughtful of you to telephone, let me know you were coming. It enabled me to open the door myself. I don't like to let the servants know that I have detectives calling on me.
Oh. You don't like detectives, Mr. Thatcher?
Not in my house. As a matter of fact, though, I've been expecting a call from you for a few days now. Ever since Margaret was so foolish as to telephone you the other night.
As a matter of fact, Mr. Thatcher, that's just the reason for my visit. Margaret didn't sound at all well to me.
Very observant of you, Mr. Walters. Margaret isn't well. She's a neurotic.
That's funny. When I knew her, she was a perfectly healthy young lady.
Perhaps. But now she's definitely neurotic.
Then, of course, you've put her under the care of a physician.
I dislike your attitude very much. Are you implying that my son and I aren't treating Margaret properly? Because if you are, you can get out now. Actually, you have no right in this house. I received you because I wanted to show you that there was no reason for Margaret's call to you the other night. Now I shall let you see Margaret. You can hear from her own lips what I've been telling you.
Yeah, I'd like to see her.
If you'll excuse me, I'll go up and bring her down myself.
Thanks.
I won't offer you a drink. However, the radio is over there. If you wish to turn it on, it may help you pass the time.
This program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin. Dandy Jim Carrey broke out of the death house a little over 4 hours ago.
Holy mackerel.
With only 2 days before his execution, Dandy Jim became the first prisoner ever to escape from the death house. The police have thrown a dragnet all over the country and promise a speedy arrest. Keep tuned to this station for further details.
Here he is, Margaret. Please tell him how you feel.
Hello, Margaret.
Hello, Larry. I don't know what was the matter with me. I was just upset and nervous. That's why I called you, Larry.
Yeah, that's what Mr. Thatcher told me.
Now, look here, Walters. I've stood for a lot from you because you were a friend of Margaret's. But I'm telling you, I'm not going to stand for any more insinuations. It won't do either Margaret or Kendall any good at all. Remember that, Margaret.
I'm not insinuating anything, Mr. Thatcher, but I'm not a fool. I know darn well that Margaret called me for some reason, and I don't believe a word of what you're saying.
All right. You've succeeded in making me do something that's very painful both to me and Margaret.
Please go, Larry. Please. I don't need your help. I don't want it.
Don't worry, Margaret. I promise you that this won't affect Kendall at all. Now, Mr. Walters, here are the facts. Margaret's made a very good marriage.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. Exactly. A girl in Margaret's position has no right to expect to marry my son. You see, Mr. Walters, my son was brought up with everything in the world he wanted. His for the asking. Margaret, on the other hand, had a much different life. Much different.
You mean that she wasn't spoiled?
That and other things. If I did spoil Kendall, Mr. Walters, it's only natural. When a child's mother dies at the birth of a child, and a man has to be both father and mother, his son is apt to be indulged.
Or hated.
Have you ever heard of Dandy Jim Carey, Mr. Walters?
Oh, of course.
He's in the death house now, awaiting execution. You didn't know that he was Margaret's brother, did you?
Oh.
You see what your insinuations have made me do, Mr. Walters.
Uh-huh. I see. But it may interest you to know that Dandy Jim escaped from the death house 4 hours ago.
What?
Thank heaven.
I think that's your phone.
I'll answer it.
I wouldn't dream of it, my dear. I'll go.
Margaret. Margaret, why didn't you tell me? I can see you're in a jam. Let me help.
I can't, Larry. Just leave me alone. It's best that way.
Hello?
Believe me.
Hello. Hello, answer there.
But, Margaret, I only want to help. Believe me.
Evidently a wrong number.
Yeah. You seem to have a lot of them around this house.
And now, Mr. Walters, I think there's nothing more for us to say to each other, so...
Good night. If you want me, Margaret.
She'll know where to reach you. Good night, Mr. Walters. Now, my dear, we'll wait for the telephone to ring again. Only this time, when Mr. Walters isn't here, you will answer.
No. No, I won't.
I think you will. Won't you, my dear? I think you will. Won't you, my dear?
Where's Kendall? I want Kendall.
Kendall won't help you. He never will.
Stop it! Stop!
Certainly. All you have to do is to pick up the telephone and say what I tell you. Well, you wouldn't want to disappoint your brother, would you? He desperately wants to get in touch with you.
All right.
Margaret had a brother, Dandy Jim Carey, who had escaped from the death house and is even now trying to get in touch with her, while she sits on a bench in Central Park waiting anxiously for Kendall.
Oh, Margaret, I'm sorry I'm late. I tried to get away, but Father...
I know, darling. Sit down here right next to me on the bench. Oh, the park's beautiful at night, isn't it, Kendall?
See, I look forward so much to sitting here quietly with you. It's the only time in the whole day that I'm happy.
Do you think that's right, Kendall, darling?
Huh? What do you mean?
Well, that two people so much in love and married should live, be only happy when they can sneak away from the house they live in to sit in the park and hold hands.
Oh, Margaret. I know. I'm no good. Why don't you leave me?
Oh, stop saying that, Kendall. Don't you realize that's just what your father wants?
I know, but there is just nothing I can do about it.
But there is. You're going to have to make a decision, my darling. You're going to have to come away with me.
I want to. So much. But I'm scared. We'll starve, Margaret.
Well, we won't. I tell you, we won't.
It's hopeless. Do you think that I could stand watching you work and support me?
You wouldn't have to. You could go to work.
I want to. But you know what happened when we tried it once before. Father saw to it that no one would hire me. And if I did get a job, he had me fired.
Well, we made a mistake. We'll have to leave New York.
Where will we go?
What difference does it make? We'll be together and we'll be happy.
But you won't have anything. I don't care so much for myself, but I couldn't stand it for you.
That's not true, Kendall.
Do you mean I'm lying? You mean that I really don't want to go with you?
I mean that you're afraid to face the facts. You have no reason to be afraid for me. I wasn't wealthy before I married you, and I wasn't unhappy. I am now. I won't be because I love you very much if we go away together. I don't care how little we have as long as we're people, living together, supporting ourselves and away from your father.
Margaret, I will. We'll go away. We'll never see my father again.
Oh, Kendall. Kendall, darling. Oh, when will we go, Kendall? Tomorrow?
No, we'll have to make plans.
Why? Your mind is made up, isn't it?
Of course it is, but we can't just pack up and go like that.
Why not?
Well, there are things to do. We have to find a place to go, get the tickets.
We'll go down to the station and get on a train. What difference does it make where we go?
But we can't rush. Maybe...
All right, Kendall. I have an appointment now.
With whom?
Your father and my brother. I don't suppose you want to come with me.
I think it's better if I stay out of this.
Yes, Kendall. I guess I have to face it. I think it's better if I stay out of your life, too. Permanently.
Margaret.
Yes, Kendall. I love you very much, but you'll never break away from your father. As he told me, he's done too good a job.
Well, you talk as if Father were deliberately
trying to... You don't see it. You'll never see it. Goodbye, Kendall.
No, Margaret, wait. Wait!
Come in, Margaret, my dear. It's cozy in here.
Why did you make me tell Jim to meet us here?
It's an ideal place, my dear. Who would ever think of looking for an escaped murderer in the Castle Chess Club?
Are you going to help him get away?
Question is premature, my dear. This reunion between beautiful sister and doomed brother appeals to my sense of the dramatic. That is why I brought you to the Castle Club tonight. I hope you realize the honor I've conferred upon you. The first woman ever to set foot in the Castle Chess Club.
That was your idea, wasn't it? You're the president of the club, and you made them put that rule into effect.
Why, yes, my dear. Now that you mention it, it was. You see, I don't believe that a chess club is any place for a woman.
That isn't the real reason. You hate women. You've hated us all ever since your wife died. And that's why you hate the son you think caused her death.
Shut. Silence.
Shouting doesn't change anything. I'm right. That's the explanation for you and everything you've done.
You're impudent. And you shall pay for it.
I don't care. I'll do anything you want if you'll only help Jim get away.
Do you realize, Margaret, that you're asking me to break the law? Aiding an escaped criminal?
Stop it. I know all about you. How do you think I met Kendall? It was through Jim, of course. I knew that you were the leader in all the crooked business that Jim was doing. I begged him to stop, but he wouldn't.
Thank you for being so frank. I often wondered how much you knew about me.
And I know that it was your fault Jim killed Mr. Merritt.
Rather a bold knock for a man who's hiding. Open the door. Your brother will be glad to see you.
Kendall!
What do you mean by coming in here?
I thought that you should know that... Well, I followed you.
You followed me? For what reason? I specifically told you...
I noticed Larry Walters following you, too, and I thought maybe there was some trouble.
Well, it was very thoughtful of you, Kendall. Very thoughtful indeed. But as you see, there's nothing wrong. Margaret and I were just having a little chat. You can go now. Did you hear me, Kendall? I said you can go.
I heard you, Father.
Kendall, I want you to stay.
You'll regret this, my dear Margaret. Go home, Kendall.
If you won't do as I ask... Then I want Kendall to stay.
I hope you heard what Margaret just said, Kendall. A deliberate attempt to blackmail your father and to do something unlawful.
Well, I don't... I'm not...
It's time you knew the truth, Kendall. We've been married a whole year, and if you're ever going to become a worthwhile person, now is the time.
Margaret.
You can't stop me now. I'm going to tell him.
Kendall, you can prepare yourself for some vicious lies.
Kendall, you're going to have to be strong enough to face the truth. Your father is a blackmailer.
I don't believe it. No, Margaret,
it's true. After your mother died, when you were born, Evans Thatcher became a bitter, rotten old man. He used his position and his reputation to find out things about people, and then he blackmailed them.
Ridiculous.
But Margaret, father didn't need money.
He liked to hurt people, to see them squirm. He wanted to hurt the world because he'd been hurt.
Kendall, she hates me so much, she's trying to poison your mind against me. She hasn't one iota of proof.
You covered your tracks well, didn't you? You had my brother Jim do all the dirty work for you. Didn't you ever wonder, Kendall, what business affairs your father and Jim could possibly have had together?
Well, it did seem kind of peculiar.
Kendall, go home. Let me handle this. I'll explain everything to you in the morning. My word of honor.
But, Father...
You have my word. Go home.
Hello, everybody. This is a nice little family gathering.
Jim!
Stay where you are, Jim. Stay right where you are, or this gun might go off. Go on, Kendall. Get out.
No. No, I'm staying. I want to hear all of this.
Yeah. Tell your son how you double-crossed me with Merritt.
Shut up.
Why? What have I got to lose? If you don't kill me, the cops will. But why don't you tell your son how you made me pack a gun when I went to Merritt's and how you knew he'd have one, too?
So it's true. Margaret wasn't lying. You are an evil old man.
One more step, Jimmy, you'll be dead.
Jim, wait. Mrs. Thatcher will help you to get away.
Too late now, sis. But he could have helped me, he folded. And I kept my mouth shut in court for him.
Now we'll have the truth. You didn't accuse me because no one would have believed you. I was too careful.
What's the difference? First, I'm going to kill you, and then I'm going to die happy. Now get out of my way, Kendall.
Stand back, Kendall. He's not going to hurt me. I'm going to kill him. I won't be blamed for it. He's an escaped convict.
I'll tell. I swear I'll tell. I'll tell the police just how it happened.
You're not going to be alive to tell anyone anything. Kendall, stand back.
You're not going to shoot, Father, or you'll have to shoot me first.
Get out of my way. Are you crazy?
No, Father. Just seeing you as you really are. I'm growing up, Father.
You idiot! These fools can ruin me. I'm going to say that Jim killed Margaret. Then we took the gun away from you. But I had to shoot him in self-defense.
All right. Hold it. Everybody reach.
Oh, thank heavens you come, Walters. You can arrest this convict.
And you, Mr. Thatcher. Now I know why you dislike detectives. Drop that gun. Come along, Jim.
Give me that gun, Thatcher. No, give it to me, Rod.
Break it up, you two.
All right. Clear. Take this.
Oh, Jim. Jim, darling.
It's all right, sis. It's better this way.
Are you all right, Jim?
I'm okay. I'll be dead a little quicker than you thought. Well, thanks for getting Thatcher for me.
I didn't get him for anybody. He took a shot at Margaret.
Thanks, anyway. Now Margaret will be all right. Won't you, sis?
You mean we'll be all right, Jim? Kendall and me.
Yes, that's right, Jim. Don't you worry about Margaret. We'll be really together now.
From shadows and stillness, mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination, charging the mind with doubts and fears. For mystery is a strange companion, a living memory in the haunting hour.
The Haunting Hour, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 18th of August, 1945, from NBC Syndication. You're listening to An Hour of Horror, on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, coming up next, a program from CBS that sort of marked the end of radio as it was. The Suspense series, on the air at this point for about 12 years, lost its main Autolite sponsor and for the next 3 years would bounce around the CBS radio schedule without financial support from an advertiser. Much went the way of many radio shows of the time as more advertising dollars were put into early television. This episode stars movie actor Peter Lawford and the story A Terribly Strange Bed. from June 7th, 1954, on CBS.
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. Peter Lawford in tonight's presentation of
Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents a classic study of suspense, a new dramatization of one of the most terrifying stories ever written. Wilkie Collins, A Terribly Strange Bed. Our star, Mr. Peter Lawford.
Shortly after my education at college was finished, I happened to be staying in Paris with an English friend. We were both young men and lived, I'm afraid, rather a wild life in the city of our sojourn. And thus had probed the various refined pleasures suitable to our class, and searched for others less elegant. Searched for them in the neighborhood of the Palais Royal, which lies covertly against the dark River Seine. And from each closed doorway, the small echoings of small promises.
That doorway there.
Oh, you're drunk, Gerald.
Pleasantly, exquisitely, modestly, delicately am I drunk. And therefore...
Therefore what, Gerald?
The doorway I have suggested and the word Frascati painted on it. Noble word, noble mysteries.
I've been there.
Oh, sly, sly, sly and traitorous friend. You have been there. And alone, slyly and without me.
And it has a ghastly kind of respectability. 5-franc respectability, and it
would
not
amuse
me. Come along, Gerald.
Come along, Gerald. That's it, Gerald. You're coming along very nicely.
What I want, Gerald...
Oh, what you want, Henry. Want and you shall find. Want and you shall find.
What I want is somewhere where we can see a little genuine blackguard, poverty-stricken gaming with no false gingerbread glitter thrown all over it.
No gingerbread for my friend. Thank you, sir.
A place not fashionable, not respectable. A place of evil, perhaps. And of emotions I've never known. Oh, Gerald, come along.
Gerald will not come along. Gerald is content here.
Listen to me.
Gerald is content here to lean his weariness and his search against this doorway. Against...
Gerald! The door had flung open behind him, and Gerald had fallen flat on his back. And for a while laughed, then with my help got up. And Gerald laughed no longer. For the room, the gaming room, was tragedy. Mute, weird tragedy. And the quiet in the room, horrible. And the people of the room, a thin, haggard, long-haired young man whose sunken eyes fiercely watched the turning up of the cards and never spoke. The flabby, fat-faced, perspiring player who registered on a pasteboard how often black one and how often red and never spoke. The dirty, wrinkled old man with the vulture eyes and the darn greatcoat who had lost his last sou and still looked on desperately. And never spoke. The voice of the croupier.
Red and black, make your bets. Red and black.
The voice of the croupier, dull, thick in the atmosphere of the room. We had entered on a laugh, but the spectacle before us was something to weep over. I'd found it. The pleasure I searched, I'd found it.
Henry.
Yeah?
Your eyes. The look in them.
Yes?
It's what you wanted, isn't it? The place of evil and of emotions you'd never...
I want to play.
Of course you do.
Come, then.
Red and black, make your bets. Red and black, your bets. Red and black, your bets.
1,000 francs on black.
Black wins.
Leave it. All of it black.
Henry.
Shh, wait.
Black. Black wins.
Leave it. All of it black.
Henry.
Yes.
This is a passion in you.
No, not a passion. Idle amusement. Yes, only amusement. Wait.
Black.
All of it. All of it red. This time, red.
Oh, not passion, then. Intoxication, perhaps.
Yes, intoxication. As I have never known it, intoxication. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Which has become...
Red. Red wins.
All of it, red. and 10,000 more.
Oh, which has become passion.
Which has become passion.
Red. Red wings.
Now, the black croupier.
Black.
Oh, permit me, sir. Permit me to restore to their proper place the two coins which were dropped. There, in their proper place, 1,000 francs.
A tall man, and quite fat, pinched into a frogged and braided surtout. A man of goggling, bloodshot eyes, mangy mustaches, and a broken nose. And the dirtiest pair of hands I ever saw. Yet in the mad excitement, his look, his hands, held no repelling influence on me. For now, in the mad excitement, in the reckless triumph, I was ready to accept even such as he.
What wonderful luck is yours, sir. I pledge you my word of honor as an old soldier. In the course of my long experience in this sort of thing, never but never have I seen such luck as yours.
Thank you.
Go on, sir. Boldly, handsomely, break the bank.
I assure you, sir, I have every intention...
Do it then, sir. Go on, break the bank. My gallant English comrade, boldly, break the bank.
All of it. Black. And I did go on. Went on at such a rate that in an hour...
Gentlemen, the bank has discontinued for tonight.
In an hour of a kind of ecstasy I'd never known, all the notes and all the gold in the bank now lay in a heap under my hands. The whole floating capital of the gambling house under my hands, waiting to pour into my pockets.
No.
No?
No?
No, not in your pockets, sir. For no breeches pockets were ever sold could hold such heavy winnings.
Well, then how...
May I take your pocket handkerchief, sir? Thank you. Ah, tie it up, sir. Tie it up in your handkerchief, as we used to tie up a bit of dinner in the army. There, shovel it in. Now then, sir, two tight double knots each way, with your permission. And the money's safe.
Thank you.
Feel it, sir. Hard and round as a cannonball. Feel it. champagne, sir. I will buy you champagne.
No, thank you, I...
Well, for your friend, then.
For Henry's friend, then.
Amiable, gracious Englishman. Champagne! Champagne for the friend of the conqueror of the bank, and for me. Come, sirs, to my table. I am Fabian Nero, gallant sirs, and you?
Henry Calder, and this is my friend, Gerald Titchener.
Henry, Gerald, Fabian. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Henry, Gerald.
Thank you.
Henry and Gerald.
Fabian, we are friends, aren't we?
To have touched your sleeves, to have you seated here beside me. This old soldier's heart will burst, my eyes will weep, my hands will... the champagne. A toast, gentlemen. A toast to...
Not for me, please.
Oh, of course not for you. Gerald and I, then.
You and Gerald, Fabian.
A toast to the goddess Fortune, who embraced tonight our Henry and smiled secretly upon him and nestled very close. The goddess Fortune, gentlemen. An English cheer. Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah.
Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah.
Ah. Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah.
Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. Fabian, quickly enough. Yeah.
Gerald, you were tipsy before, now you'll...
Henry, not to permit the golden blood of France to flow through the veins of this vivacious Englishman, and Gerald, your friend. Oh, shame, Henry, shame. Drink, Gerald.
Toast to France, to the present company, to the croupier.
And the croupier's wife.
And the croupier's daughter. The croupier's daughter's... And to ladies elsewhere. And to ladies...
I should like coffee, Fabian.
Coffee?
Coffee. For me and for Gerald. For intoxication...
Well, coffee it shall be. Coffee! Coffee for the darling of fortune. Coffee!
But The word pronounced by Fabian Nero seemed to have a magical effect on the company present. They suddenly had lost interest and all rose to depart. Probably they had expected to profit by my intoxication, by the proffering of champagne. But finding I would have none of it, had now abandoned all hope of thriving pleasantly on my winnings. Whatever their motive might be, at any rate, they went away in a body. And the silence of before was now deeper than ever. Then, from a sort of vestibule at the far corner of the room, a woman appeared, bearing a tray of coffee and glasses, and walked towards us, enveloped in silence. Woman of emaciated face and burning bright eyes and wisps of colorless hair drifting across her rouged cheeks.
Your coffee, sir.
Thank you.
You will find it strong and good.
Thank you.
Strong and good, handsome sir. Here you are, sir.
Thank you, for I am parched with thirst. And it was kind of you and of Fabian, and gracious and generous.
How wise you are, Henry, to drink this coffee of Millie's, the coffee of Millie Prudhomme.
Millie Prudhomme.
Divine Millie. Beautiful Millie Prudhomme.
Oh, handsome sir. Will you have coffee?
No. Champagne, Millie. To drink your beauty.
How wiser than your friend, Gerald, to drink coffee and rid yourself of your little amiable exaltation of spirits before you think of going home. And you must, my good and gracious friend, for with all that money...
Good and gracious friend.
With all that money to take home tonight, it is a sacred duty to yourself to have your wits about you. Drink, Henry. Drink your coffee. You are known to be a winner to an enormous extent by several gentlemen present tonight who are but mortal men, sir, and have their own amiable weaknesses. Drink, Henry. Who'd surely rob and murder if you were to...
Wait. Wait.
Oh, yes, dear Henry.
I'm ill. I'm very...
What?
He is ill. Very ill. I will weep.
Henry is ill and I am drunk. Millie will sob. Will you sob, Millie?
Ill. A fit of giddiness. The room whirls round and round, furiously.
Henry!
Your voice deafens me, furiously.
Oh, my dear friend, my dear friend. Madness to go home in your state. You would be robbed, murdered. You need a walking and then a sleep, and not a murdering.
A walking and then sleep, and in a safe place, Henry.
Yes. Yes, walk. Sleep.
In a safe place. The place of Millie Prudhomme. A rooming house above the game room. And the capital beds of Millie's rooming house.
I don't...
Madness to go to your own home. Sleep at Millie Prudhomme's. And tomorrow...
Go home safely with your winnings. Tomorrow, in full flow of life. And in broad daylight. Tomorrow.
Gerald.
Fabian's right, Henry. If anyone needs sleep, you surely need...
Come then. Quickly.
Come then, quickly. I will help you. Put your arm about me. That's the dear boy.
Millie? Millie.
Yes, Gerald. Come.
Here, Henry, here. The choicest room of Millie Prudhomme. The capital bed there. And the tasteful furnishing. And the deep sleep to be had. And the safe one. Till tomorrow, Henry.
I don't know how to thank you.
Oh, you have thanked me enough already with the exaltation of your splendid company. And that I could have been of some small service to your small malady. Oh, Millie.
Well, let me go, Gerald. Oh, handsome sir.
Come, Millie. Henry wants his sleep.
Oh, divine, Millie. Divine. Oh, Henry, Millie Prudhomme, she...
Gerald passed into his particular oblivion in the middle of a sentence. I walked over and locked the door. Then I took my money, my winnings wrapped in a handkerchief, and placed beneath the pillow of my bed. I lay down. My senses still swam, and I looked up at the heavily brocaded canopy, and it seemed to move. Somehow to move. And for an instant I thought, this was a terribly strange bed.
Autolite is bringing you Mr. Peter Lawford in Wilkie Collins' A Terribly Strange Bed. Tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Well, Harlow, vacation time's nearly here.
Yes, Hap, but not for spark plugs. They're the very heart of your car's ignition system. And if they're not right, the chances are you won't get smooth and efficient engine operation during summer's hot and heavy driving.
That's why now's the time to check them, eh, Harlow?
Yes, Hap. And when replacements are needed, wise drivers insist on ignition-engineered Autolite spark plugs, like the famous Autolite resistor spark plug. That's the amazing double-life spark plug that gives top performance for twice as long as ordinary spark plugs.
And the Autolite resistor is only one of a complete line of Autolite spark plugs designed for every use. Right, Harlow?
Right, Hap. So, friends, see your Autolite spark plug dealer tomorrow for a spark plug checkup. From bumper to tail light, you're always right with Autolite.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Peter Lawford in Elliot Lewis's production of A Terribly Strange Bed, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I could not sleep. Restlessness took me over and I got out of bed. There was the dim, quiet flicker of a single candle, and next to it, a washstand. I plunged my face into the water. There was a single chair, and I sat down and tried to compose myself. Slowly, slowly, the giddiness left me. A shutter. And a window. Shutter attached by a single hinge and flapping against the side of the house. And no lock on the window. No way of locking the window.
Henry?
Gerald. Gerald, are you up?
Where?
In a room. Over the gaming place. It's all right. I've locked the door. But the window, it's...
Window... And there's a window.
Listen. Did you hear? I was wide awake, and every one of my senses seemed to be preternaturally sharpened. Piano and a song I had never heard. And then behind it, the laughter. Wide awake, yet somehow the effects of whatever drug I had drunk seemed suddenly to arise again. And for an instant, toy with my perception so that I reached for the wall to steady myself lest I fall down. Leaned against the wall for support.
The jollity of the evening, Mildred, and the you from England. Oh, dear Millie, dear Millie, dear Millie.
So it is. And Fabian, the youth and his friend, and the handkerchief now.
He's such a dear boy.
Yes.
He's such a dear boy.
Yes.
He's such a dear boy. He's such a dear boy. He's such a dear boy. He's such a dear boy.
The moment their voices wavered and fled, a kind of melancholy seized me. I walked over to the window and looked out. Looked out upon blackness, a swarm of blackness. No shapes definable could be made out through the gloom, except a lighter grayness of a sort, as if an abutment of some kind, I supposed. Directly across the window and somewhat below it, but how far across and to what length below, I could not determine. For all purposes then, I knew only that we were above the street level and some three stories. And having felt the walls directly adjacent the window, I found them to be sheer. No one could enter there. I walked over to the bed and took a pillow and placed it beneath Gerald's head. The bed again, and I lay down. This bed that now I was lying upon, I must again describe to you. A four-post bed with a regular top lined with chintz. The regular fringed valance all around. It was ridiculous now that I tried to sleep. I couldn't even close my eyes. I resolved then to beguile the tedium of my wakefulness by making inventory of every article of furniture I could see. Window, washstand, chest, chair, dressing table, picture. Upon the wall opposite the bed, a picture. A fellow in a high Spanish hat crowned with a plume of towering feathers. A swarthy, sinister ruffian, looking upward, it might be, at some tall gallows on which he was going to be hanged. Such was the picture. Another chair, candlestick, picture. It seemed to be moving. The hat had been pulled over the eyes, and there, the hat itself was gone. The hat was gone, the plumes, the... Was the bed moving? No. No, it was but a brief and terrible dream. How could the top of a bed move? Brief and terrible dream. Trick of the eye and the mind's going down for a moment into sleep. Yet I let my mind say it. The top of the bed had moved. Gerald. Gerald, wake up.
Huh?
Open your eyes.
Now what?
Shh, quietly. Keep your voice in a quiet tone.
Why, what?
Shh, listen. Above you, directly above you, look, there's a picture. Do you see it?
Yes.
A minute ago, the man was wearing a hat.
A hat?
He was wearing a hat. Now he is not.
Oh, my friend, you're very drunk. I'm very proud of you. You
fool. Listen to me.
All right, Henry.
Where there was a hat... is now a peephole, and we are being watched.
All right, Henry.
Now stay where you are, but be alert.
All right, Henry. Henry.
Yes.
What are you going to do?
Make sure of a thing.
What thing?
The bed.
What?
Keep your eye on the canopy. I'm going to lie in the bed now, Gerald, and make sure that they're not trying to murder us.
How?
By feigning sleep.
What?
By feigning sleep, Gerald, just that. Now, quiet.
Yes.
Now, I am constitutionally anything but timid. I have been on more than one occasion in peril of my life, and I have not lost my self-possession for an instant. But when the conviction settled on my mind that the bedtop was actually moving, it loosed a feeling within me, foreign, laced through with terror. So I lay there, motionless, speechless, breathless. The candle spent went out, but the moonlight still brightened the room. I lay there. It descended. The whole canopy came down, closed down.
Henry.
I lay there.
Henry.
Literally spellbound by what was happening.
Out of bed.
At once I could not tell whether reality was here or my imagination was taking hold.
Quickly, before they...
Closer, closer.
Henry.
Gerald's voice shattered this warm sea of fascination that bound me, and I leapt from the bed.
Look, Henry.
Yes.
There, the middle of the bed top. The huge wooden screw.
Like a press. To smother me and relieve me of my winnings and then kill you.
Come, sir. Mr. Calder, open. Unlock the door. Open.
The light of the morning, Gerald, and look. It comes up and through the window, across the narrow shaft. Another building. We can leap it.
Well, not I.
What?
No, not I. My legs are still unsteady. If I should stand up on that sill, I'd fall into space.
Well, then wait.
And hurry.
Yes.
Hurry. Hurry.
The rest of my story is soon told. From the building next door, I reached the ground and sought police. With them, I returned. And Mr. Fabian was seized, as was Mrs. Prudhomme. The police congratulated me on my good fortune and Gerald's on his, and told us that they would probably never know how many people had been smothered in this diabolical bed. So tightly was the canopy pressed to the bed that I could not retrieve my money. The mechanism had to be released from the room above. The police bade us go, and finding ourselves walking homeward, Gerald said to me,
I know a place where gambling is carried on at such a fever pitch that you'll be carried to the heights of excitement.
Needless to imagine, I refused to go along with Gerald. My adventure cured me of ever again trying Rouge et Noir as an amusement. The sight of a green cloth with packs of cards and heaps of money on it will henceforth be associated in my mind with the sight of a bed canopy descending to suffocate me in the silence and the darkness of the night.
Suspense, presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. Peter Lawford.
Here are the results of the great $100,000 Autolite family charity drawing. Over 5,200,000 entries were received for this event. Last week, the final drawing was held in New York under the supervision of a distinguished committee. Here are the names in the order of their selection. $50,000 will be distributed to the charity or charities designated by Desi L. Irish of Vallejo, California. $20,000 will go to the charity or charities designated by Lucille Foisy of Miami, Florida. $5,000 to the charity designated by Vincent W. Sisler of Howe, Indiana. $3,000 to the charity designated by Stuart Smith of Ogdensburg, New York. And $2,000 to the charity designated by L.G. Bridgewater of Kennewick, Washington. These people and 20 others who will each designate $1,000 to their favorite charities have all been notified. And now this is Harlow Wilcox wishing you a summer of safe driving with the reminder that wherever you travel, from bumper to taillight, you're always right with Autolite.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from June 7th, 1954 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBeaunier. Thanks for listening.